you're going to come up and play 7 o'clock. Now, I'm not making any promises. I'm just saying we're going to attempt it. There's very little filler in the sermon tonight. This is pretty straightforward. We're going to discuss what we started to discuss quite some time ago. Now, it would be nice. What would be nice is to actually have the same group of people here 4 weeks in a row. Do you know the chances of that? Zero. Never happens. I mean, I don't even know if some people come to this church this summer. It's been that bad. But we're going to talk about, and this all goes back to this morning. So if you look at chapter 11 and verse 27, you know, Pastor Warren spends a lot of time on the introduction, the part that some of you'd never listen to. This stuff is not religion. It's not good sermons. It is what happened. And you need to understand what's going on to understand it. Folks, simply stated, the leadership of Israel had enough. So if you look at verse 27, Jesus has now entered into the city. He's gone into the temple. He has cleansed the temple. He has cursed the fig tree. And he comes in verse 27, it says, and they come again to Jerusalem. And in this case, the they is Jesus and his disciples. And as he was walking in the temple, there come to him the chief priest and the scribes and the elders. That group is called the Sanhedrin, which is simply the governing body of the Jewish people at that time. When I say governing, they were not self-governing, but they governed under Rome. This was what it was made up of. Sadducees, which is most of the priest, the family of Annas and Caiaphas and all of those, the aristocracy, they were a bunch of liberals. They used religion. Do we have people that use religion in America? On the other hand, you had scribes, which would probably in this case be the Pharisees, those who believed in the resurrection but were wrong about grace and those sorts of things. And they had the elders, which would be the aristocracy of the land. Okay? Chapter 12 begins with Jesus then telling this parable after the discussion of authority. He tells a parable of how the nation will be destroyed. How do you think the people accepted that? Verse 12. When Jesus got done speaking, they sought. Who's the they? The leadership. If you don't get this, all of this becomes religious goop. You see, they're not real happy after he says, this is going to be destroyed. You wouldn't be either. By the way, I'm not a prophet or the son of a prophet. I hope it never happens until Jesus comes. But you do realize our country is on the abyss. Unless you're really into your television and sleeping, this country, folks, we had two, RNC and DNC, and the number one characteristic of each convention was chaos. Hillary Clinton was being booed down in her speech, which the media didn't want to report. Well, Trump is Trump. What else do I got to say? You know, this is the problem. Sleepyheads in this room think what we have is going to continue forever. Well, Jesus said it ain't continuing. So verse 12. And they sought to lay hands on him. And by the way, that didn't mean they wanted to hug him. They sought to lay hold on him, but they feared the people. For they knew that he had spoken the parable against them, and they left him and went their way. But they didn't give up. Now they decided this. We can't just openly destroy Jesus, so what we must do is somehow destroy him. So they plan very carefully some people to come and trap him. This morning we dealt with the Sadducees. That's the second story, where they sought to humiliate him by making fun of the resurrection. You believe in the resurrection. Well, whose husband, you know, whose gets the woman? Husband number one, husband number two, husband number three. By the way, the primary point of this morning was the resurrected life is different. It's not more of the same. Tonight, we're going to look at the first thing. And by the way, it's very clear. Verse 13. and they. Who's the they? Yeah. They sent unto him certain of the Pharisees and of the Herodians to catch him in his words. And when they were come, they say unto him, Master, teacher. Oh, I hate to read this. This sounds like a yuck. We know that thou art true. And carest for no man, for thou regardest not the person of men, but teachest the way of God in truth. Man, if anybody ever says this to you, run for the hills. They asked this question, is it lawful to give tribute to Caesar or not? What kind of question is that? But it's also a question that demands what kind of an answer? Yes or no? They don't even ask it once. Look at the next line. What's the next line say? Shall we give or shall we not give? They ask the same question, and they're looking at him in the face, and shall we pay taxes or shall we not? And by the way, Christians, I could teach on how to think for the rest of my life, and some of us would still be going, you don't know how to get out of a trap question. Well, we move on. But he, knowing their hypocrisy, said unto them, why tempt ye me? Bring me the Greek word. I'm sorry, I had no ability to put Greek in my notes. Steve, Christy fixed my computer. Do you know what that means? She fixed it real good the day before she left when I was in St. Louis area or in Missouri. So it's all messed up again. And all those things that you fix, you're going to have to refix, just so you know. Bring me a penny. By the way, we're not talking about a penny. That was just King James 1611, a denarius. A denarius was about the wage of one day. It was a Roman coin, and that's about what a person normally got per day, a denarius. Okay? Bring me one. He says, bring me a penny or a denarius that I may see it. And they brought it, and he saith unto them, whose is this image, this icon, an icon, and this superscription, epigraphe? You probably heard of epigraphy. I mean, these are words that we know. And they said unto him, well, it's Caesar's. And Jesus makes one of the great statements ever recorded in history. Jesus answering said unto them, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. He didn't answer yes or no. He answered yes and yes. And they marveled at him. We're going to quickly work our way through this. Maybe you'll learn some things. Maybe you'll be reminded of some things. Maybe this will help you in your thinking. Maybe. Maybe it'll help you understand our country. Maybe it'll do a lot of good things tonight. We'll see. Let's pray. Father, I would ask that you would help all of us as we look at this simple text, but yet an extremely profound text. A text that, according to the Jewish historian, is one of the great contributions of Christianity to the world, separation of church and state. If Bernard Lewis thinks that, why aren't we impressed by this text? This is the text that has saved and made America unique up until at least the 1960s. Help us tonight to be reminded and learn a few things along the way, we ask in Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. By the way, everything in your notes I'm going to read one time. If you want to take notes, fine. If you don't, fine. Politics. Politics are, that's the more or less sign, more or less politics. Everywhere, always. If you don't like politics, die. That's your only solution. You say, I'm moving someplace where we don't have politics. Good luck on that one. This was all about politics. You had, first of all, two groups come to Jesus. You had the Pharisees. The Pharisees, we learned this morning, and by the way, you already know this, they believed in the resurrection and those sorts of things. But in this case, it's important to know some basic fundamental beliefs, which first of all would be this. The Pharisees would be anti-Roman. They really wouldn't like Rome controlling their country. How many people like another country controlling your country? Probably nobody. Nobody is happy when some country comes in, controls your country, and sends the money back to that country. The Pharisees didn't like that. More importantly, I think, the Pharisees would be very traditional, or very traditional Jewish. They would have dressed differently. They would have spoke differently. They would have worn traditional clothing. You could see them any place you went. You would know this person. Listen, you go to Devon Street in Chicago, which I recommend. First of all, you need to go there for the cultural experience. You need to get your head out of wherever it is and just go there for the experience. You go to Devon Street and you see the cultural experience, and which side would it be? Closer to 94, it is, that's the western side of that part of Devon Street. You're going to see Hasidic Jews. When you see Hasidic Jewish males with their black hat, their curls, their black clothing, their white shirt, the little things hanging out, you don't question, this is a Hasidic Jew. Yes? That's a Pharisee. They didn't hide who they were. Everybody knew. Now the question is, how in the world does this group come alongside the other group to talk to Jesus? Who's the other group? Herodians. We don't know anything about Herodians outside of the Bible, but we can kind of fill in the blanks. Here are some of the blanks. They were loyal to all things Herod. At this time, they would have been Herod Antipas from the north, from Galilee in that area. But they're loyal. By the way, the very name Herodians means you're loyal to that. You know, it's like being a Christian, you're loyal to Christ, a Herodian, loyal to Herod. Which implies, next in your notes, therefore pro-Roman. Why would they have been pro-Roman? Because Rome appointed Herod Antipas. How do you like this? I am a king. Well, kind of. Rome made me the king. You know, that's the way it was. They would also be pro-Greco-Roman culture. They would be pro-Greco/Roman culture. So folks, when you saw these two groups coming, you would see one very hyper-traditional Jewish people coming in the dress and the robes and the hair and all the paraphernalia, fringes and all of that coming. And over here you have another group that would be its opposite. They like Rome, they like Herod, they like the Greco-Roman culture. These are the two groups in Israel that hated each other. Politics, anybody? Politics. In your notes. Plus, behind the scenes, I say in your notes, plus Rome herself at the fringes of all issues. You can never talk about this discussion of taxes without thinking about Rome. Please look at me, friend. We're going to read the verse in a minute. When you read the Bible, you're going to figure this out. Why was Jesus crucified? Well, in one sense, there are three big reasons. Look at me. From God's perspective, Jesus was crucified for what? For our sins. From the Jewish perspective, Jesus was crucified because he claimed to be the Messiah, the Son of God. Romans weren't interested in religion. The Romans were not interested in him, none of that stuff. So you know, you can look at God's perspective, you can look at the Jewish perspective, and on the other side, there is the Roman perspective. And the Rome is interested in simple things. Luke 23 encapsulates it. It is the most important verse in the Bible on this subject. What did Rome think about this? Look in your notes. And the whole multitude of them arose and led him unto Pilate. Pilate was the Roman governor. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this fellow, Jesus, perverting the nation, stirring the pot, folks, forbidding to give what?" That's a straight out lie. Every place Jesus ever touched on taxes, he encouraged people to give to pay their taxes. But that didn't make any difference. When they went to Pilate, they said, "We got this guy. He's stirring up the people. He says, don't pay your tribute, your money to Caesar." And beyond that, he says, saying that he himself is Christ, the Messiah, a king. By the way, that verse, 23:2, tells you why Rome put Jesus to death for political reasons. The Jewish people put Jesus to death for their religious reasons. And then there's God's reason, which is the big reason, so mankind could be forgiven and have eternal life. All three of those at the same time, all of it God's work. Next, we have exuberant flattery. Oh my goodness, they come to Jesus tripping over themselves, trying to flatter him. Anytime someone flatters me, if someone comes to me and says, "You're the greatest preacher I've ever heard," I start looking for a door. I start checking my pocket. Something bad's going to happen. You say, why? Because I have been doing this a week or two. When you're young and you preach a sermon and people come up to you, Noel, you're not young, but you're newer at preaching. And somebody says, that was so wonderful. Really what they want is they want something. Noel? Okay, we'll move on. Folks, I've been around too long. I start checking my pockets. I start thinking they're robbing my house while I'm at church. You never know what's going on. Exuberant flattery. The purpose of all of this in your notes, to trap, catch, or entrap Jesus. All those are the same words. Interesting, folks, that verb is only used here, I believe, and it means like trapping an animal or catching a bird in a trap or in some way trapping something like that, like a lion. They're literally going after Jesus to trap him. So this is all the backdrop of a little question about taxes. Lastly, there's a trick question. And a trick question about taxes. Oh, I missed the one part above. Let me go above. I say the question about taxes, and not just taxes, but the dreaded and hated, and I don't know if you use this term, but this is what everybody uses. It's called a poll tax, P-O-L-L. Do you know that term? Head tax. This, by the way, the Greek word in this text, I was going to put it in there, but my Greek fonts aren't working. A poll tax was the one that the Jewish people hated the most. Because, folks, if you made money and then you had to pay a percentage of your money to taxes, you didn't like that. But the poll tax, you had to pay to Rome for the privilege of Rome controlling your country. Here, thank you for coming. Here's some money. How would you like it? By the way, everybody hated it. And it was a pretty good amount of money. I mean, it wasn't millions, but it was a pretty decent amount. And you had to pay it every year per person, per head. Every person had to pay a tax just to have the privilege of existing in Rome's world. So we come down to the beginning or the end of this introduction, the trick question. Everyone look at me. I'm going to look at somebody out here I can pick on. Let me see, who can I pick on tonight? Josh Kerr, he deserves it, doesn't he? Josh, let me ask you a question. Are you ready? Have you stopped beating your wife, yes or no? All right, FBI, you're laughing. I'm going to ask you a question. Are you ready? FBI, have you stopped robbing banks? Yes or no? Is this not a good question? Cliffy, have you stopped taking cocaine? Says no. See right there. He's shaking his head. Folks, the worst questions in the world are questions where they trap you into it's either door A or it's door B. That's what they did. So, is it lawful to give tribute or pay taxes to Caesar? Yes or no? Is this ever done in this country? Every moral issue in the last 60 or 70 years in this country has been done by this, and Americans that are Christians are so dumb they don't know how to think. And by the way, if you don't believe that, listen to our speeches from our politicians. Let me ask you a question. If someone says, are you against abortion or for it? What kind of question is it? Yes or no? Are there any other positions? There actually might be. There actually might be that you could leave a door for some elements. By the way, I guarantee you would if the mother's life was threatened. That's not very common, but it is a little bit. My point is, they trap us in yes or no questions. Are you homophobic? What do you mean by homophobic? You understand this is the way our country's done, and the media likes it because the media likes two positions. If it bleeds, it leads. And if they can trap you, are you for Hillary or are you for Trump? And my answer is no. All right, in your notes. It's important to know this. when you brought the two groups together, one group was looking for a no. Is it lawful to give tribute to Caesar? The Pharisees would say no, because they were traditional, patriotic. So they wanted Jesus to say no. But if you say no, Rome's going to be after you. On the other side, the yes, if Jesus said yes, it is proper to pay taxes, then Rome's happy, but the people are unhappy. This was a perfect trap, everybody thought, until Jesus steps in the middle, and he does something that has changed the world, at least up till recently. In your notes, four quick statements. Number one, there are, according to Jesus, two spheres. Spheres of influence, maybe you could call them. You say, what do you mean by two spheres? And somebody put the wrong verse in this. Frenchie, what is wrong with you? It's Mark 12 in verse 17, I think, isn't it? Yes. So if you look in your own Bibles to verse 17. At the very end, Jesus basically says there are two spheres in which we live. There is the sphere called Caesar, if you prefer, the sphere of the state or government. And then there's this sphere called God or the church. So basically, friend, Jesus is doing something. He's establishing something that changes everything. Because before this in human history, and all the human history around this, and most of the human history after this, most people saw the state and religion as being one. Sometimes religion had more power, sometimes state had more power, but they're always one. If you're Russian, you're Russian Orthodox. If you're Saudi Arabian, you're Wahhabi Sunni. You are state and church together. And Jesus says, no, those two are not the same. They're two spheres. If you want to draw this image, this is my image. Just draw two circles, reasonably close together. This will help you picture this in your brain. Two circles, reasonably close together. And write in one, church, or God. And then the other one, Caesar, or the state. Jesus saw those two as being separate. That we could exist in this world. And by the way, Baptists and Christians have done this all over the world. We do this in places that are hostile and even survive there, not as easily as we have in countries like America. Now, Pastor Warren has added something to this. What we have found is this works best in certain circumstances. I believe if you picture two circles, doesn't make a difference which side, church and state, and you picture behind the church and the state like a, what do you call these things? If you look up on the back, there are pictures and photos and other things that have a frame. If you picture these two circles, they have a frame. America had a frame that stood behind the two spheres, church and state. That frame, that backdrop, was several things. Listen carefully. A Judeo-Christian belief. Our country was built on, behind all of this, everybody acknowledged that truth comes from God. God has spoken 10 commandments. For instance, if I take you to, you're not going to go as far south as my mother. If you go to Carrollton, Illinois, and you look at the courthouse, I know it's illegal, by the way, but they still have the 10 commandments on the courthouse in Carrollton, Illinois. Do you realize that most courthouses had that? It was just assumed. This is kind of the back of everything is the 10 commandments. Now, for all of you that are new here, please just hear one more thing. Our country also had something else. Now, we have four Supreme Court justices that deny Judeo-Christian background, and they deny this. And this is the reason we are struggling as a people. Our backdrop also was two documents, a Declaration of Independence and a Constitution. We had a judge here in Chicago named Posner that said, by the way, when you become a judge, you swear on a Bible to uphold. He said the Constitution is a document of no value. It's outdated. It should be discarded. He should have been kicked out of office that day. Are some of you with me? It'll never happen because from Frenchie up here to most of us, we just go back to sleep. Next, What's on television next? By the way, this didn't happen on my watch. It happened on Ron's watch and guys his age and before. When our Supreme Court decided in 1963 and 64 to do what it did against the Constitution and against the Declaration, war should have been declared then. It's too late now. Pete Vasilevich thinks we should have a war in this country. I couldn't get most of you at church, let alone get you to do anything else. Do you realize if there's 40 or 50 million people that are evangelicals, do you realize if we marched on D.C., we could change this country? We could shut the government down for a month. Are you listening? We'll never do that because I couldn't get Frenchie and Ron and half the other guys in this church away from their TV. You say, you're being harsh. Are you kidding me? We have had justices of the Supreme Court violate our Constitution since the 60s. We did it in 63, we did it in 64, we did it in 73, and we did it again! And we went right back to TV and food. That's all we're interested in. Making sure my retirement comes in and I'm comfortable. So I told Pete, good luck on that. Good luck on that. Most of us are too big of a coward, so I don't think anything's going to change. It isn't going to change from Donald Trump. Christians that believe something could change something, but we'll never do it sleeping. Sorry. You say you're mad. Look at yourself. Do you really think if pastors in America tried to rally us, most of us could do it? We would be afraid our government check wouldn't come in. I'll move on. By the way, am I speaking truth, yes or no? Folks, the moment the Supreme Court decided they were the law in 1963, the war had ended. Then they did it in 64, then they did it in 73, and some of you don't even know what I'm talking about. And they did it, was it 2000? When did we do the gay thing? Was that 13 or 14? By now, if Hillary Clinton becomes the queen, do you understand our country cannot possibly continue as it's ever been? She will appoint 3 or 4 Supreme Court justices and, what is it, Katie, bar the door. All right, I move on. In your notes, some of you think I'm mad. No need to get mad. I told Pete, you might as well. Pete says we got two choices. I talked to him for an hour recently. He said we got two choices. He says we can have a revolution. No, we got three, really. I said, we're going to stay asleep. But we could have a revolution. And I don't mean violent. I mean legitimate protest. You take as many people that say they're Christian. If there's 50 million of us, do you realize what that could do? But we're not going to do that. The other option, he says, I'm moving to Costa Rica. In your notes, from 33 AD until 1776, and really the 1780s, it took us that long to understand or figure out this concept of separation of church and state. It was almost 1,800 years, friend, before anybody figured out how to have the church and the state or religion and the state separate. From the 1780s until the 1950s, I believe in America, not perfectly, but this country had separation of church and state. In a proper way. So from 1780s to the 1950s, that was to experience this freedom. But in my lifetime, that's all gone to pot. From the 1960s to the 2016, we are now, I say, to watch it with increasing velocity disappear. And that's what we do. We just watch it with increasing velocity disappear. It disappears, it disappears, it disappears. Please look at me. There have been 4 rulings in the last few months, and every single one of them has gone against religious freedom. Would you look at me in the eyes? Look, hey, right here. I think there is an amendment to the Constitution that promises that Congress shall make no law. Yes. And Congress shall not in any way impede on religious freedom. But you have a Supreme Court. I think there's 4 cases I read recently that have denied that religious freedom to, because you might hurt the feelings of a transgender. God knows that's the one thing you don't want to do in this country. Did you know Mike Mahak is not working? Did you know he's not working? Not Mike, Bert. Did he tell you why? Because of the gay issue. He just resigned his job. He had enough of the political correctness in the school system in Wisconsin. How are you doing? That's my wife's cousin. Most people, I'll tell you what they'll give up. Nothing. All right, we got to hurry because we only have 5 more minutes. Number 2. When it comes to taxes, we already live or exist within those 2 spheres. The most important thing to understand when Jesus talks about these 2 spheres to these 2 groups of people, he basically kind of pokes fun at them because they already exist in those 2 spheres. We'll start reading in verse 15. When they asked, "Shall we give or shall we not give?" But he, knowing their hypocrisy, said unto them, "Why tempt you me? Bring me a denarius, that I may see it." By the way, when he told them to bring them money, what was he saying? Look up here. I don't believe in paying taxes. Jesus says, okay, you don't believe in paying taxes. Bring me some money. When you bring the money, what is he telling you? Whose money is it? Whose money is it? They already lived in the Roman sphere. They were using Roman money. Don't talk about paying taxes. You're already using that money. You're benefiting from that money. Of course you have to pay taxes. He's kind of trapping them in their own stupidity. In verse 16 it says, "And they brought it and said unto him, Whose is this image, this icon, and this superscription?" Epigraphy comes from that. Epigraphy, phae is the Greek word. I mean, there's something, there's an image here of someone and there's something written on it in your notes. He knew their hypocrisy. Secondly, he knew they wanted to trap him. He knew that. He knew they wanted to trap him. Thirdly, he turned the tables on them before they knew it. To me, the most interesting thing of this whole thing, before you get to the conclusion, he's already trapped them, because when he tells them, "Bring me some money," and they bring him Roman money, they're already trapped. The Pharisees that don't want to pay taxes and they're handing him money, you're using Roman money. Sorry. Next in your notes. He says, and I've already said this, bring me a denarius. If you don't know how to spell denarius, just to write down, bring me a Roman coin. And the idea being is, so you are using Roman money. The image and superscription, you had an image of Caesar and a superscription of Caesar. And I say in your notes, not only to Caesar, but with titles of divinity. Every coin would have titles on the coin. It's according to where it was minted, in Latin or in Greek. And those titles would say, look at me, those titles in every coin would say either in Latin or Greek something about this Caesar being divine. So you don't want to pay your taxes. Really, but you don't mind using Roman money. And that Roman money that you're using is blasphemous because it claims the very money you're using, it claims that Caesar is a god. Uh-oh. See, he's trapped them big time. I think they got the hint. That's the reason they decided later, we're not going to do this anymore. This isn't working so well. I like most of all, he made or forced them to answer. Whose image is on this coin? Whose image? Answer the question. Caesar. Next page. I want everyone to, we'll just stop here for a moment. Let me just tell a short story. My wife remembers this. 1986, I became assistant pastor at a church for 7 months. The pastor was the weirdest collection of people I've ever met. I found more criminal behavior in that church, and after a while, you understood why, because the pastor was a criminal. He was a liar. He was, from the pulpit, would talk about hunting deer out of season. From the pulpit, would talk about shooting deer with a high-powered rifle in Illinois, which is illegal. He did all kinds of illegal stuff, so you accumulate a bunch of illegal people. One of the ladies that was in the church, an excellent Sunday school teacher, her husband didn't pay taxes. He hadn't paid taxes for like 7 years. You say, "Pastor Warren, what do you think about paying taxes?" For you that are sleeping, I want you to listen to this. This is what I would tell him and you. Do you drink the water? Yes or no? Do you use the roads? Yes or no? No, you answer. Do you use the roads? Yes or no? You do. Do you use the electricity? Yes or no? Do you understand why you pay taxes? By the way, I don't like the taxes. I don't like how much we have to pay. I never have enjoyed taxes. But may I say this, wherever you live, if you're going to actually live there, unless you mint your own money, own your own property apart from all other countries, you supply your own water supply, your own electric supply, I'm sorry, friend, you must pay taxes because you have bought into the system. There is no other system. Now, what justification did he use? Well, he said, I don't like to pay my taxes. They ask too much money. Okay, number three. We have obligations to both spheres. Since there are two spheres, and we already live in both of them, we have obligations to both. I'll hurry through this. Nothing here is very profound in the sense that you haven't heard this before. In verse 17, Jesus clearly says, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Or pay back to Caesar. Since you're using Caesar's roads, you have to pay back. Since you're using Caesar's water, you have to pay back. Since you're using Caesar's natural gas, you know, everything is connected to the government in one way or another. You have to pay your taxes, and et cetera. And by the way, you render to God the things that are God's. Notice the last phrase. They thought they had trapped him, but at the end, they are marveling. Look at me, and I want to get right into these notes real quick. Here's the thing. They said, should we pay our taxes or should we not? They wanted a yes or a no. And what did he say? He gave them two yeses. You render to Caesar what Caesar's due, and you render to God what God is due, and you don't make a choice. Unless, by the way, do you pay taxes to Mexico? Do you pay taxes to Brazil? No, because you don't drive on their roads, you don't use their electricity, you don't drink their water, but you live here, you must pay taxes. It's just that simple. Now, I'm not going to talk about our relationship to God. Quickly, here are some of the things that we are required to do. Nick, first, pay taxes. Duh. Secondly, and by the way, this is the harder one for me. This is the hardest one for me. Pray. It's very hard for me to pray for our country. I don't know what to pray for. I can pray for mercy. I can pray that God, but I don't know how to pray for our country. Frankly, I haven't for quite some time. You probably have recognized, if you haven't recognized, you've been sleeping. We haven't done much patriotism since when? When? Whenever they passed the law about gay marriage. I was done with patriotism to this country. Maybe it doesn't bother you. I have a hard time looking at the flag and getting all hooped up when we have a country doing this towards God. By the way, this used not to be this country. But if you don't believe it is now, I want to ask you a question. Is Hillary Clinton pro-gay or anti? Take a breath. Donald Trump, pro-gay or anti? He's pro too. In your notes. We have obligations to pay taxes. We have obligations to pray. We have obligations to obey all moral laws. And I think most of us will go ahead no matter if they're immoral laws, unfortunately. Next, we have obligations, and to this point, we have privileges to participate in government. And lastly, we have obligations to influence government as much as we can. I'm going to quickly read just Romans 13 for right now. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power, resisteth the ordinance of God. And they that resist shall receive to themselves, and the better word is judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. At least that's what should be. Wilt thou then be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and thou shalt have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good, but if thou do that which is evil, be afraid, for he beareth not the sword in vain. For he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. Wherefore you must needs be subject not only for wrath, but also conscience sake. For this cause pay ye tribute also. for they are God's ministers. He's talking about people in public office attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. 1 Timothy 2:1 says, I exhort therefore that first of all supplication, prayer, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men, for kings and for all that are in authority. Now, turn to the front page of your notes, and we will be done in a minute. I have said there are two spheres, God, or church, and government, Caesar. Look at me. The best form of this has been what happened in this country from 1780s to the 1950s. Since then, we have gradually been erasing Judeo-Christianity as a backdrop, and now we're erasing the Constitution. Now, you should ask yourself a question. How you could ever vote for somebody that puts their hand on a Bible and swears to uphold the Constitution while doing the opposite? We are doing that now. I could rant and rave about the Navy right now. The things that are going on in the Navy, I heard there's a Navy ship, have you heard this filth? Named after Harvey Milk. Is that the guy's name? You know, a gay radical, far as I know, had nothing to do with the Navy. Why are we naming Navy ships after gay radicals? You tell me. We're a bunch of pigs. I said, secondly, we already live or exist within those two spheres. Thirdly, we have obligations to both spheres. And fourthly, and I mean this one seriously, this is probably the reason most Americans will, I think our country will just generally dissolve. Tim Durham, I think you know, your wife gets wound up, but I don't get as wound up because I think our country is going to be like a big balloon that just gradually goes flat. I think that's where we're headed right now. I think we've been headed there so long, but as long as the government can provide what the Roman government did, circus, entertainment, and bread, food, we're happy. I mean, you think I get enraged when I see your kids playing with their phones? Because that's exactly how our government's keeping us happy. As long as we have food and entertainment, everything's cool. Who cares that we stand for Antichrist? Number four, we only disobey a sphere under extreme circumstances. But remember, and at our own peril. There are no guarantees in the Bible that if we stand for truth, we come out in this life on the good side. Look at me. Almost everybody who has stood for righteousness in this land has lost their case. I think they have without exception. Some of them were total setups. Some of those bakers, you hear the stories. Somebody owned a little bake shop in Waukegan. A gay person could go to 50 bake shops and get a gay cake, but they went right to the Christian over and over to force the issue. Christians have not won one of those. Now, again, most of us, as long as we have food and as long as we have entertainment, if you're honest with yourself, we're happy. You say, do you believe that we ought to do something? Yes, but I have no way of doing it. But I will say this, if we do it, it has to be something that's about righteousness, which means that's got to be the way we're living. Doesn't help if we are disobedient to God, demanding righteousness of others. Only under extreme circumstances and at our own peril. Acts 4:19, but Peter and John answered and said, whether it is right in the sight of God to hearken unto you more than God, judge you. For we cannot but speak the things which we have seen and heard. Acts 5:27, and when they had brought them, they set them before the council, the Sanhedrin. The high priest asked them, saying, did not we straitly command you that you should not teach in his name? And behold, you have filled Jerusalem with his with your doctrine and intend to bring this man's blood upon us. Then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. I want to say this and I'm done. The church was persecuted for the first three centuries. Look here. The first persecution under Nero was just Nero was a maniac. The first real persecution, it wasn't long and it wasn't empire-wide, was under Domitian. Domitian became the emperor in, let me think, he would have become the emperor in 81 and he was emperor to 96 AD. Towards the end of his reign, and his younger brother was named Titus. Some people think he poisoned his own brother. Titus died very quickly from 79 to 81, and Domitian came to the throne. Somewhere towards the end of his reign, he started saying about himself. He started claiming of himself and wanted people to call him Dominus et Deus, Lord and God. You had to sacrifice to the Caesar as Lord and God. Dominus et Deus. Christians wouldn't do that. Here's my question. What will it take that draws a line in your life? Father, thank you for your word. These are serious matters. My whole life.